have the chance card, you know, you've won a beauty contest, collect £10. You won a beauty contest, collect the winner.
Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. My name is Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Each week we go all in on life's biggest losers and no-hopers, the ones who roll the dice, and every time the dice always rolls off the damn table, and when they reach down to pick it up, they inevitably see snake eyes. Yes, actual snake eyes. And instead of running away, they pick up the snake and shout the words Yahtzee. Those are our people. We salute you. Joining me at the crap table today is Ben Vandeveld.
Hello.
Hi.
It's not that crap a table.
No, it's not. It's actually a chest. We're recording on a tea chest.
Well, let me introduce our guest. Our guest for today is a gentleman called Paul Flannery. He is a multi-talented comedian, actor, performer, presenter, guitarist, and amateur pirate.
Hello.
He has performed as part of the musical mashup duo Ray Guns Look Real Enough, and more famously, he is yet another Maze Master in Crystal Maze, yeah, as we work our way through that entire cast, and he is the helmsman and reincarnation of Traegard in the successful theatre adaptation of much-loved 80s children game show Nightmare, a game which I have played three... 1-1, lost 1, drawn 1 record.
Not bad, yeah, really.
Yes. I have a 100% record, but then I've only played once. So, yeah. And we did manage to kill 3 people before we won it. So I feel like it's very much...
Yeah, it's very much a grey area these days.
Moral relativism is a key part of this show.
It's a victory, sure, but at what cost?
Although Nightmare, my level of panic at it is appalling.
Yes.
Like when the goblin horn is the most terrifying sound in all of Western culture.
That is half the fun, I think. Yeah. just the abject panic. The more seriously people take it in that sense, the more peril, the more... you buy into it, that it just makes for
brings
such a good
back
show.
A lot of childhood terror.
Yeah, of course. It just having people have such a big reaction to what is, you know, ostensibly Paul Duncan McGarity in a latex mask.
Before we get going with discussing this episode's world's worst thing, Paul, what are you the worst at in the world?
I'm fairly bad at letting people do things in my kitchen.
You're quite territorial.
Anything, or cooking?
Well, you know, cooking's okay. Washing up is the one thing. If I see someone doing washing up badly, I'm incensed with rage.
Wow.
I can't.
How can someone wash up badly?
They can do it.
Thing is, I'm well aware that I can wash up badly, but that's only apparent after the fact. Yeah. How can you be watching someone in the act of working and just going, you are a fucking amateur, mate?
I imagined washing up badly would be not doing the washing up, but I didn't know there was like a technique.
That would be better than doing it badly.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, if you know how to do it properly, then you will start in the same way, and if you see people not starting in the right way, this is quite embarrassing. It just drives me nuts. You know, really hot water, cutlery in, start with the glasses. Don't fill up the bowl with glasses. Don't put sharp knives underneath the suds.
Yeah.
Ooh, things like that. Yeah, I...
It's really, really bothering you. To a surprising level.
I've had to sort of rescue some friendships after this.
Really, also, to be fair, if you are stupid enough to just throw loads of sharp knives in a bowl full of soapy water and wash them, you deserve the consequences.
This week's topic is a subject dear to all of our hearts, actually. We've decided to tackle the world's worst board game. We're recording this in Ben's living room with a stack of board games, both in the chest underneath the microphone and in the bookshelves beside us. Paul is a big gamer, and as am I as well. So we thought no better subject to talk about. I do have to say that previous guest, friend of the show, James Rowland, sends on his go fuck yourself to you for picking this topic, because he very much wanted to talk about that as well.
Yeah, I imagine his World's Worst board game is probably the same as mine as well.
could.
Right. No, also, if you would like to send a go fuck yourself on to a future podcast guest, you are more than welcome to do that.
Some series of, like a chain letter of go fuck yourself.
If you were thinking about doing board games for this podcast, I got there first. Go fuck yourself.
Flag planted. Flag, yeah. Ben, first of all, what has your research led you to discover?
Oh man, there are so many. This is such a pregnant area.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's fit to pop.
I mean, if we're going to, like, just to open up, the world's worst board game experience is probably playing Monopoly against my Jewish father and my Jewish brother, because negotiations get fucking deep. Yeah. It's like, Dad, can I have Old Kent Road? Certainly, but only if you give me half your inheritance back. Okay, fine. But actually, I remember playing a cracking game of Monopoly, I think against you as well, where the negotiations got so deep.
I think, yeah, you're at your old house.
Yeah.
I think there were, like, contracts being drawn up, there were, like, carryovers for, like, 10 goes time.
Yeah, it was amazing. That was the level of detail that Monopoly needs. It was like, right, okay, I'll lend you that money, but I want half of the takings from every house on there above the third house.
It's
beautiful.
I mean, Monopoly is a troublesome game.
Yes.
And it's not, like, for, like, serious board gamers, a lot of people do not like Monopoly. And it was one of the lowest ranked games on Board Game Geek.
Which is, by the way, like the cyber mecca of board games.
If you have any questions about board games, all of them will have already been asked by people on the forums on Board Game Geek.
I love that when you have, like, a slightly what is a niche thing. There'll be some two or three websites out there just made for people who like that kind of thing, and then all of a sudden it gets popular and we all cling on to one of them, and Board Game Geek just suddenly went, we've got millions of followers. Oh my god.
That sounds an awful lot like Chortle for standard
comedians. It's exactly the
BBC for mainstream news.
They've got over 10,500 games rated on their rankings on Board Game Geek.
Oh my god.
Do you want to know what the lowest ranked one is?
Well, no, because I might mention it in a minute.
Okay, fine, I'll come to it.
So there's basically, I've divided my choices up into either games that are just shit, because they've got terrible mechanics, or games that defy logic as to how they got made, because they are so offensive. And not just to my lovely North London woolly liberal 2016 values, but to any values at any time. So one really dull, boring one is a game called Uncle Wiggily. Now,
I think he took me on a date once.
Uncle Wiggily is not as creepy as he sounds. Uncle Wiggily is an elderly rabbit from a kid's book by a chap called Howard Roger that was written in the 1910s. And essentially the game is a track, and you go around it by picking cards that determine your movement. And that's it.
So it's Ludo, but with cards.
Essentially. And with a strange rabbit backstory that no one gives a shit about.
Wow.
Like, the estate of Beatrix Potter must be fucking furious. So there's that. There's another one that was called Candyland, which is very similar with the tagline, a sweet little game for sweet little folks. No. Too saccharine. Too saccharine. And there's loads.
If you say Candyland three times, does the box appear?
Let's not try it.
But really what I was interested in was the really offensive games. And I don't want to sort of use all of them up, because there's so many. But two that really stand out for me, I'm going to go down politically incorrect routes. In the early 1980s, a company that was not the company that owns Monopoly released
Game Monopoly! Yes! I'm so glad you mentioned this.
Yes.
They were called Fire Island Games, and they made a subdivision called Parker Sisters to release Game Monopoly.
Yes, and I don't know whether... Is it Parker Brothers who own Monopoly?
Parker Brothers.
I don't know what their views on homosexuality are, but I feel like they would have got pretty fucking grumpy about that and copyright infringement.
Oh, yeah.
But instead of buying hotels and houses, you bought bathhouses and bars.
Yeah, you did.
That's entirely accurate.
All were into. I mean, Alan Turing, when he wasn't cracking anything, couldn't drag him out of the saunas and stuff.
Couldn't give the man a hotel. All not for me. No, unless I can convert it into a bathhouse.
Saunas, not steam rooms.
I think there's all of them in the from what I know of the bathhouse culture. Yeah, they have a variety of different rooms and experiences. Some of them lit, Some of them not at all.
I tell you this, though, in Gay Monopoly, since bathhouses and saunas are so important, getting the utilities is really key.
you really want the water company.
Yeah, exactly. You make so much money. Yeah. obviously, with Gay Monopoly, the pieces that they picked are just staggeringly offensive. Yeah. No, well, not offensive, just like cliched. So you can get a teddy or a Jeep. I don't know when the Jeep became a gay vehicle.
Queer as fuck. Aidan Gillen started driving around in the Jeep.
That's 20 years after the game came out.
Yeah, or that was the answer. Or that was already there, we just didn't know
about
it.
Maybe Aidan Gillen was saying.
Whoever was writing Queer as fuck went, obviously a Jeep.
Yeah.
I mean, that
Russell T Davies owned a box on Gay Monopoly.
Yeah.
entire show on Gay Monopoly.
That's what it was originally pitched as, Gay Monopoly, the TV series.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
You could also get a blow dryer, a leather cap, some handcuffs, or one stiletto.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. No, not even a bear, you know?
Yeah, not a bear or an otter or a squirrel or any of that.
Squirrel.
I don't know what a squirrel is.
It's a gay man who likes biting nuts.
Nice.
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Yeah, or harvesting the nuts away for future use.
Storing them somewhere dark and warm.
Yeah. Oh,
put them in
too
his
deep.
Just put them in his cheek.
Board
games. We're on board games.
We're also the one still over there. I'm presuming that's for like transvestites, and that is not to do with sexuality. That is gender roles.
Yeah, they had chance cards as well. They're called camp cards, which I really like. Included, and they were things like, oh, strike a gay pose to win $10 or something like that.
You have to exploitative.
Just hand on the hip, limp wrist, and shout the word "fabulous," and that was being gay in the early 80s.
I mean, the thing is with Gay Monopoly, at least it was trying its best to give some sort of positive message.
I think that's what they thought they were doing. Yeah,
there is another board game, a pair of board games, which again tried to give across a positive message. There is one called Blacks and Whites.
Oh, yes.
And another one called Life as a Black Man.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's the word, I think the word black man is all one word.
Yes.
Life as a black man.
Now, Life as a Black Man, like both of them, in all the reviews I read of them, they basically went, we can't tell whether this is satire or racism. We just can't tell. In Life as a Black Man, you either go to Black Uni, Black Ghetto, the military, a Black Brigade, or Glamourwood, because clearly they were really afraid of getting sued by Hollywood, or they were trying to do a tie-in with Gay Monopoly.
Glamourwood. Oh, I see.
And the whole objective of the game is that you reach freedom. Like, the whole time you're basically not free.
I just want to point out, this game was released in 1999.
Yeah, it's really
recent. Where? By whom?
In America by morons. Yeah. But if you want to have the thrill and excitement of playing Life as a Black Man, you too can do it, because it is soon to be available as an iPhone app.
Blacks and Whites is even worse.
It's like a mix of that, but with urban development popped in. And basically, you get to either play as Blacks or Whites. I mean, Chess and Drafts started that out.
Yeah. Sure.
And basically, if you're white, you get £1 million to $1 million to help to develop your property. If you're black, you get $10,000.
Yeah. And there's restrictions on where you can buy and build if you're black as well.
And sometimes there's cards that just go...
It's sadly accurate.
Well, no, that's the thing. It is really sadly accurate, but... This is so upsetting. I'm going to talk about one more racist game before I talk about my actual choice. And the fact that I can say one more racist game from a selection of hundreds.
There are too many to mention. We don't have time.
There is a lot of racist games. I'm sure you might, Barry, speak about...
I've probably looked at the same list you have, I think.
There is a game from Germany. Guess which era we're going to.
It's the game from 1938.
Called Judenraus.
Yes.
Now, just to prefigure, this, we've discovered a problem with this podcast, Paul, because we're talking about the world's worst things. It's very difficult not to just go, Nazis.
Yes, there's always a Nazi thing, isn't there?
There is always a Nazi.
There's got to be Nazi version of Monopoly.
Yeah, they can get that branding everywhere. Yeah.
Monopoly, and it's just countries rather than
Well, no, there's a Nazi version of Monopoly, and there's a small Jewish counter that's only allowed on the train stations.
Oh.
And if you land on those, you go straight to jail.
Oh, I mean, you get a pass to be able to say that.
Yes, being, I did. Also, strong work for me. Now, my two favourites, and I use that word very advisedly in this game, is this. Firstly, the aim of the game is to expel six Jews. And in the precise wording of the rules, if you expel six Jews, you are the undoubted winner. It's that level of Teutonic precision that I love in the rules. The other thing that I love about it is that apparently it was considered so offensive, the Nazis themselves didn't like the game.
Came out about a month after Kristallnacht as well. So we're right at the height of...
Let's not rub it in. Yeah, no, you get this sensation more and more that no one was really that proud.
I am a little bit concerned that Theresa May's government is going to release a Guess the Age of the Refugee game.
I mean, we're going to live on British jam and British board games. That'll be
all that British sugar that we make. Yeah, brilliant.
All the Yorkshire tea, the vast tea growing fields.
Of Yorkshire,
But despite the wide-ranging racism that is available in the history of board games, I'm going to go for a game that actually has got quite a nice genesis, but I cringe at the thought of playing it. So this is a game called The Ungame.
Oh yeah, and I've heard of this. I don't know very much about it.
I loathe everything about this game. So it was created by a woman called Rhea Zakich, and it's got quite a sad start. Basically, in the 1970s, Rhea, who's a Californian lady, she got polyps on her vocal folds, and it meant that she wasn't able to speak anymore. And when she didn't speak anymore, she discovered that actually she didn't really communicate properly with her family. Mm. And she realised that we only communicate through words rather than body language. And she felt that she wanted to solve that. And so she created this game where you would ask questions to your family members. Some would be innocuous, like, what do you do in your spare time? Others would be a bit more searching, like, if you could live your life over again, what would you change? Mm. And she found that by playing this with her family, they would open up and spoke about her illness, about kids' performances at school, about bullying. And in the words of her husband, I learnt more in 20 minutes of this game playing than in 5 years of marriage.
Yeah, that sounds quite nice. I feel like you're setting it up for a fall.
Because it's therapy in a game! That's what it is. It's horrible. You would have... Part of the gameplay is that you could go to a part of the board called the Chores Cabin, or maybe Complaints Campsite.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just...
I'm losing enthusiasm.
Yeah. It's a game created by an over-empathetic mother who can only ever speak to her children like they're primary school kids, and probably the same as her husband as well.
Yeah. Just talk to each other, guys. That's the, you know...
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Paul. Why complicate it?
I know.
And
you're married now. Don't ruin it. Just keep strong.
This is the only thing I could... get a version I could find of this is that... or only game I could find where this happened. There is also a Christian version of the board game and a Catholic version of the board game.
Yeah, because they need caveats, so they've got there's rules enough that...
Well, I presume that any game where you can go...
I presume the Catholic version of it is you don't answer any of the questions. You keep the emotions repressed.
Yeah. Or just every single card in Complaints Campsite is, it's because you touch yourself at night. It's because you touch yourself at night. Just imagine playing that with your family.
How do you win?
When everyone's crying.
Yeah.
Paul, what is your suggestion for the world's worst board game?
Well, I have a few. I'll skirt around the couple and lead up to the big one. I desperately don't like Cards Against Humanity.
Yes, we've talked about this.
It's just not fun.
It's really popular at the moment.
It's incredibly
popular.
For
people who don't know Cards Against Humanity, it's...
Yeah, it's a game where you draw a set of cards, and some of them are setups. You draw another set of cards, some of them punchlines. Oh no, someone draws a setup, you have a handful of punchlines, and whoever gives the most offensive, inverted brackets, one, wins. The problem I have with it is that, number one, most of the people I hang out with, you guys included, are funnier than these cards.
It's
true. I mean, all the jokes in these things tend to punch down.
Yeah.
They all seem to be about immigrants or Mexicans, or, you know, like, that's a punchline because someone is Mexican, or Madeleine McCann, or...
Yeah.
And it's just a bit
black people, I think, is one of them.
Yeah, it's a bit tiresome. It's a bit sort of like, really? I read a review that really came through. It's an excuse for horrible people to say horrible things and go, well, I didn't mean it. It was the cards. The cards let me say it.
It's sort of the opposite of the... It's like the evil version of the own game.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. I will say in defence of Cards Against Humanity, my issue with it is this, because I play it with you guys and a lot of my friends who are creative or funny people, the way to play it is not to play the card, it's to play the person. So whatever you think will make the person laugh is the card to choose.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, there's nothing worse than playing Cards Against Humanity where the person reading out the cards has no comic timing. That's I've played that.
But that's exactly who it's designed for then.
Yeah.
People who can't make their own jokes, so they're handed them on a, you know, but on
if
a card.
If you're going to learn to make jokes by handing them on a card, maybe let's not go for paedophile and rape gags. Let's maybe play Cards Against Humanity at a base level, which is about chickens.
But, yeah, there are a couple of sort of social circles I have where if I go down and we'll be playing some board games and someone will bring out Cards Against Humanity and I'll have to very politely go, oh, I'm going to step out. I'm going to step out of this one. I'm not going
to
play.
The problem is it's a really easy filler game for people to go to when they've sort of played a more in-depth board game. We'll just play this.
Yeah, I see the appeal. Yeah. I see why it's so popular. But I can't stand it. There are so many other better games for that purpose.
If someone
was
in your kitchen playing Cards Against Humanity and someone else in the kitchen washing up badly, who would you eject first?
Oh, I don't know.
Or just burn the kitchen down?
The thing is, I do with Cards Against Humanity, I do sort of want to go, should we just talk like pricks?
If the game is that, I'm just going to say some offensive things, I could do better than this.
Do you want to do it now on microphone? Yeah.
I'm all good.
Because I hear there's a really good joke that you do about a family that go into a talent agents in Hollywood.
Well. No, I do have a testicular cancer joke in The Crystal Maze.
Oh, good.
Which is just the heart. I don't know how I did it.
If that's not encouraging listeners to buy their tickets now.
Is there one magical crystal in there?
I turn around and I say, I don't know how many crystals you've got, guys. It's difficult to count lumps in a bag. But it is important, fellas. And then we run off.
Nice. Like a little public service announcement.
Yeah, like, apropos of nothing. Why am I now thinking about cancer? The Aztecs don't know.
And it's probably worse when they're in a room, you're going, you've got 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left.
Search for lumps.
any other honourable mentions? A phrase we've said a lot in past episodes as well. We might trademark the words honourable mentions.
A definite honourable mention has to go to a board game I found called Destination Southampton. which is an award-winning...
No!
It's an award-winning tourism game or...
souvenirs.
It's an award-winning souvenir game.
There's whole like travel London games and
sort of. I bought it in Whitstable in a charity shop. It was sealed, still sealed.
That was how bad the game was.
But I used to live in Southampton, so I thought, I'll buy it. See what it's like. Give it to a friend of mine in Southampton. And basically, you take on the role of taxi drivers, going around picking up fares around Southampton and taking people home. And you kind of have to make sure you don't run out of money or don't run out of time on the clock.
Right.
It's pretty bad. You don't get...
And do you learn about Southampton while you're driving around it? Is that kind of the...
No, apparently it's geographically entirely inaccurate. which is much to the chagrin of everyone in Southampton playing. That's not there! It's not even there! But also coupled with this quite boring mechanic of, I'm a cab driver. All my dreams at once.
That reminds you of another game that I found with possibly an even less scintillating title than that one, which is Swedish Parliament 2012.
Yes!
Where you literally get to play a session of the Swedish Parliament.
Yeah, you're trying to form like coalition, trying to form a government and get laws passed and stuff like that, isn't it?
That hotbed era of 2012.
Yeah, 2012. In the era of world history, you go Germany, 1939 to 45, fascinating. Mm. You go maybe America in the late 60s and culture wars, and then Sweden in 2012.
Yeah, it's not a difficult game for a country that has deeply consensual politics. Yeah. Really what you should be playing is like Colombia, 1964.
Last honourable mention goes to Talisman, which I love and hate. It's a fantasy flight game.
Okay.
First published in 1983. It's an epic sprawling role play game. You each have a little character. You travel around a board, and every time you land on a square, you open up an incident card. It will give you something to fight, or give you a magical item, or it'll give you another thing. So far, so good.
Yeah, cool.
Right, standard. There is a mechanism that I really, really enjoy. The warning signs are on the box when it says the average running time for a game is 240 minutes.
Ooh.
That's 4 hours.
Oh my god, the average.
Yeah, that's if you know what you're doing and you're playing it quickly.
Yeah,
there's this whole bit, there's this build up. It's basically a build up to nothing, because you end up going to the middle part of the board, and you have to go to another middle part of the board once your stats are high enough. And once you're in the middle, you play a small dice rolling game to yourself in order to eliminate the other players still on the board before they can catch you. Oh. It's so impressively dull.
It's like Trivial Pursuit, but without the questions, just circling to get into the middle.
Oh my god, Trivial Pursuit is so annoying. Who decided you to go back into that middle square?
Yeah, exactly. The first hour I find it incredibly fun.
The first hour.
It's so much fun. And then there's 3 hours, you're staring down the barrel of 3 hours of it. And there's so many expansions you can get as well. No. Extra characters, more board. Like, you can split up further away from all the other characters. Absolute madness. The last thing it needs to be is any longer.
Yeah.
I've sort of householded an idea of trying to do it so that there's only 100 cards in the incident deck. And the person who ends the game with the talisman, once the cards have run out, has won.
They've won.
And that will cut it down to about an hour. But thus far, there have been too many other good games coming along for me to actually try that out.
Fair enough. The average 4 hour run, if anyone's played a game of Diplomacy, sweet Jesus.
Oh my god, that's such a bad game.
And then definitely the worst game. The worst game experience we've ever shared.
Yeah.
Ben and I was ourselves and our partners playing a game of Diplomacy, which was beloved of John F. Kennedy and Henry Kissinger. And this is basically Risk without dice rolls. You're trying to sort of make manoeuvres and outthink other people.
Oh, yeah, it's all chatting.
It's lots of chatting and lots of then writing down all the manoeuvres for your armies and then trying to decipher them and remembering who's going in what order. And I think we played for 3 hours and we were only 4 moves into the whole game.
Whoa.
And then at the end we just kind of went, oh, none of this will get solved. We're going to give up. Which is very much what a lot of politicians did in foreign policy. Just went, sort it out yourselves.
Yeah.
So, give you a greater understanding of war. it is complicated. Just bomb.
I think just hitting myself in the testicles with a lump hammer would give me a better understanding of war than that game.
Like, it is set around World War One, so it starts quite tactically, and at the end you're going, just throw.
Yeah.
Everyone's moving forward all the time. Eventually, someone will crack.
Get in there.
But who is your candidate in chief?
It's the big one. It's Monopoly.
Excellent.
Yeah, I despise that game.
Why do you despise Monopoly?
Partly because it feels like we're all playing a real live version of Monopoly. and it's high time we all stopped, changed places, and someone else was the banker. Yeah. it's the sort of selfish nature of it, the fact it takes for hours, it results in arguments, people don't play the rules properly. I just don't like it. It's the mechanism is weak. Having sort of like, obviously I played it as a kid, but having got into like,
it's weird how they like kids play it. It's like nearly the first, apart from chess and checkers maybe, it's the first board game a lot of families sort of play with their children. You go, it's a really weird game to get your kids to play.
It's so horrible and cynical. There will be tears. You know, you are just going, well, you owe me money now. Well, you're bankrupt now. Well, screw you. You're on the streets.
I read a couple of sort of forums and discussions online about why people hate it so much. And the fact people can get eliminated is very difficult, because although as one person said, it was great, the one upside about being eliminated in Monopoly is that you're not playing Monopoly anymore.
I can go and do something else for a couple of hours. It's delightful.
It would be nice as if you get eliminated you have to go and set up like an anarchist commune on a different board.
That'd be great. You move into the free parking space.
You do Occupy Monopoly.
Monopoly. Yes! There we go. There's got to be a communist version, isn't there?
Right. Yes. Well, apparently you might have stuff on this. The original version of Monopoly was invented by a woman with much more left-leaning
Elizabeth McGee, the landlord's game.
1903.
Yeah, 1906, yeah. I think. It sort of developed into Monopoly. So she didn't invent Monopoly, but
got stolen somewhere on the way by bus.
And it was to show the consequences of different economic systems and so on. So
and clearly, it's been taken, tweaked, so it no longer does that.
It is to own everything and be rich.
It celebrates it. It might as well be the Trump board game.
Oh god! Which I'm
telling you about recently. Yeah, brilliant. It's like Monopoly with fewer rules.
Yeah.
It's like going, well, if you're Trump, you've won.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, if people haven't seen the Donald Trump board game, there's the trailer's on YouTube. There's a couple of videos of people playing it on YouTube. You can probably buy it on eBay for nothing at all, which is quite pleasing.
I mean, there's also the Hillary Clinton board game where most of the rules have been erased.
Yeah. But it does come with a free picture of a penis.
Yeah. Well, Clinton, Bill is the Joker card.
Yeah. Oh, so horrible.
My favourite thing about Trump the game is the fact that you've got all these, like, denominations of dollars. And you know, like in America, that they have like different presidents' faces on different numbers.
Yeah.
Trump's face is on all the dollars.
Yes.
All of the different values.
That's the first thing that he'll do when he gets in, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Put himself on the dollar bill or something.
Mount Rushmore.
Oh, yeah, Mount Rushmore, definitely. Yeah.
And the Washington Monument turned into a penis.
Yeah.
The moment we really have to worry is when he does what that Central Asian dictator did and just rename all of the days of the week after himself.
Is he Turkmenistan or Kyrgyzstan, one of those.
It's one of those. So this today would be the first of Trump. The first of Donald.
Donald's D.
Donald's D. Trump D. Yeah. JD.
In the middle of the start of Trump-member.
Oh, lovely.
Oh no, Trump-member.
Oh, God. Need a wash.
I mean, to be, if with that sort of power, you can have so much fun. I mean, if all he's going to do is change the names of the days of the week, there's a lot worse that could happen.
Yeah,
Just stick to that, Dom.
Do you have any particularly harrowing games of Monopoly that you played?
I honestly haven't played it since I was a teenager. And I've only sort of really revisited the idea of it since I got into other board games and sort of looking at the mechanisms. Because I always just remember sort of liking it, but I was playing it with my cousins. And it just always seems to have the classic sort of three or four elements. One person's eliminated early and has to do nothing for 2 hours. The other two people grind to an inevitable conclusion.
Two people are extraordinarily rich at the end, and it just needs one of them to land on the other's most expensive property.
Pretty much, that's it. Yeah, and somebody ends up crying because there's an argument, or someone steals money from the bank, or whoever's in, whoever's the banker for some reason seems to win more. And it must be because they're cheating. And that doesn't make any sense. Free parking, you get the money from the middle.
Yeah.
So it's like so much of it going based on, property management and owning things, and then free parking.
Yes.
I don't get it.
Yeah, that would be delightful if every time I wandered into a car park after 6 o'clock at night, there was just a big pile of cash. And I go, I guess this is mine.
Ideal. Yeah. I've been hanging around car parks after 6 o'clock. Off and on for the last 10 years. Only twice has there been money.
And you did have to do it in exchange for services as well.
Fairly.
Met a lot of Uncle Wiggly.
Yeah.
I had a look at the bottom of Board Game Geek's rankings, as I mentioned earlier on, to see what games are down there. And their bottom 20 includes a lot of games that would be, if you asked people to name board games, would be the first ones they'd sort of say.
Yeah.
So Monopoly is down there, Snakes and Ladders, Battleship, Mousetrap, Bingo is there, The Game of Life, Operation. But the bottom ranked game is Tic-Tac-Toe.
Noughts and Crosses,
yeah.
It hardly counts, surely.
Well,
it's not a board game.
Yeah, it's considered. I mean, it's a lot of board games. These Cards Against Humanity doesn't have a board, but so I suppose there's a grey area. It doesn't need a board to be a board game. A tabletop game.
I understand why. I've got a version of Tic-Tac-Toe, which I don't really use. It's small, it's ornate. It's like got a small black and white sort of chessboard with the 9 squares on it.
Yeah.
And I've got these tiny little carved skulls. Oh. Some are white, some are black.
Nice.
And they you put up. I've never played it. It doesn't make it any more interesting.
Yeah. Well,
you're playing a strange voodoo version of Tic-Tac-Toe.
Yeah, no one ever wins.
But no, normally someone next door dies.
Yeah.
It's been around for like a very long time. The ancient Romans played a version of it called Turni Lapilli, where you had 3 stones that you had to move around, and there's graffiti all over Roman towns and cities of like the 3x3 grid where they were playing it on walls or on the ground or on the pavement or whatever. It's mentioned in an Anthony Trollope novel from 1864 called Can You Forgive Her, but it's called Tit-Tat-Toe, which I just found quite funny. We've already mentioned Trump the Game, which is just, it's a worse version of Monopoly. There seems so little skill, it's just lots of undercutting each other, and there's a very random nature to it. And the slogan for it on the advert was, it's not whether you win or lose, it's whether you win.
really good. That's like, does it have the chance card? You know, you've won a beauty contest, collect £10. You won a beauty contest, collect the winner.
It does include a personal letter from Donald, which has so many exclamation marks in it, which, I mean, it was released in the late 80s, but it's very much a precursor to how he communicates on Twitter.
Yeah, the exclamation mark was very popular in the late 80s.
I love the exclamation marks.
Donald has the hugest exclamation marks.
biggest exclamation mark you've ever seen. The question mark is a loser.
Doesn't know what it wants.
I also went down the line of having a look at some terrible board game names. So the earliest game that they discovered which has a named designer was a designer called John Jeffries, who designed a game in 1759. And it's called A Journey Through Europe, or The Play of Geography. Yes, it seems like your Southampton game, but on a wider scale. But the earliest US games, a lot of them are based around Christian morals and morality lessons, so they're all called things like The Mansion of Happiness, or, this is my favourite, The Game of Pope or Pagan, or The Siege of the Stronghold of Satan by the Christian Army.
I want to play it.
I love a board game that has a subtitle.
Just want to play it. Just sounds great.
And then there's a backlash against that in the late 1800s, where sort of capitalism was beginning to come to the fore, and so games with more capitalist messages, sort of the rise up through the classes, emerged. So the games like The Checkered Game of Life and The Game of the District Messenger Boy. He's a young lad delivering messages and eventually rises up to become US president.
Likely.
Yeah, very likely. These days, absolutely. Mm. But I did have a look at some more offensive names. Great. As well. I do have a couple more to add to you. For any listeners who are offended by some of the terms that are about to be used, please know I'm quoting from a list that I have written down, which I took off the internet.
And also, you feel this way.
There's a game called Darkies in the Melon Patch. It's young black men running through a melon patch being sort of pelted by people like angry grandmothers and mainly white people.
And some of the artwork for that is of its time.
It's very gollywog, for want of a better word. As is another game called Five Little Nigger Boys, which is a shooting game. You had a little cap gun and little targets shape of five young black boys,
and it is rated on Board Game Geek as the favourite game by the US police force.
That's clearly a joke.
Which is the defence of the US police force. These are ironic shootings.
God, that's so gullible. And there's a game called What Shall I Be? The Exciting Game of Career Girls, which is a game from the 60s when women were beginning to move into different jobs and enter the employment world. But the jobs you could become in this game were teacher, air hostess, actress, nurse, model and dancer.
Not a creative industry.
Well, they did have a male version, but the jobs you could become a lawyer and an astronaut and jobs.
A male game where you could become anything you wanted because fuck the patriarchy.
No limits. And also, one of my favourite terrible modern games is called Boozen Memo, which is from the early noughties. It's a German game. It's a variation on memory, you know, where you're trying to pair up cards. Yeah. And I think it's 40 odd cards. You have to match the left and right breasts of different women.
That's always tricky, isn't it?
Paul, you just had a look on your face that said, that's a game I've played theoretically in my mind. I get to sleep of an evening.
Wait a minute, whose breast is this? Yeah. Can't remember. Where's the other one?
Two supposed to be together?
They really missed a trick not calling that game Breast Who.
Strong.
Guess who? Okay, does it have an areola? Yes. click. Does it have a beard? Yes.
Is it wearing glasses?
I would go for the ambiguous questions of guess who version.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Does this person look like they've killed?
Do they enjoy jazz?
It's a very much very adorable version.
Much better. No one ever wins. I mean, if you do get the right person, absolute miracle.
Yeah.
Celebrations all out.
But the worst game I found by the worst game company I could come across, they're a company called Hammerhead Enterprises, which definitely sounds like an evil corporation.
Oh, good, yeah.
They invented a game called Capital Punishment. In Capital Punishment, you have four criminals and two liberals and 15 innocent citizens.
And your job, your task, is to try and execute your criminals while using your liberals to release your opponent's criminals in the hope they will kill your opponent's innocent citizens. In the game, the innocent citizens, when they die, go to heaven, and the criminals go to hell if they get executed. So it's a very much a pro-death penalty game, you know, filling that very glaring gap in the market that people want. You know, families want to sit around and celebrate capital punishment.
Sure, we sometimes kill the wrong person,
yeah,
but they do go to heaven.
Yeah. Nearly the most offensive thing about this game is the box, which pictures a state penitentiary on it with the word state pen crossed out on the sign and replaced with overnight hotel. With those criminals coming in one door and out the other, while sort of liberals who are all bearded and wearing tweed jackets and smoking pipes are standing around having what are probably conversations about, you know, Dadaism. Ignore this going on behind them. And the criminals, oh boy, they are caricatures of black people, as you can conjure them up yourself. There's an effeminate man in a frilly shirt with heels and jazzy trousers.
As a criminal,
this is from the late 70s, so...
That's a degenerate, they're different. Oh, yeah.
There are various foreigners, including there's like stereotypical Italian looking mafia guys and things like that, but this company did not stop there. Capital Punishment was followed up by another game called Public Assistance, or Why Bother Working for a Living.
Oh yes,
I just want to read you a couple of extracts from the rules of Public Assistance. It called itself the original non-PC welfare fraud board game made by some impolite individuals who grew weary of the endless real-life fraud and poverty engendered by the real-world welfare states. The only board game banned in the USA, due in no small part to the perjury of the welfare enabler bureaucrats, not to be played in the company of those who are diehard lefties, tree-huggers, reds, or people from Seattle or Portland.
Is this a game that's basically made by the people who comment below the line on internet pages?
It's Breitbart News in game format. There's a later section of the rules called Adding More Realism. Two players may decide to take this great game to the waiting room of their local welfare office and invite two real-life able-bodied welfare recipients to join them in the game while they're waiting for their food stamps and welfare checks.
I just thought that was like... A myth, or just like that people can blame a welfare state for causing poverty.
Yeah, yeah.
When literally what it does is prevent it.
Yeah, well, they are very much of the opposite opinion, and they have a board game to prove it.
No, I mean, they're just no. Go to LA, just have a look at all the homeless people who below. They're like the Walking Dead. You know, they're just. You're just going to create more of that.
But if you go to those homeless people in LA and then take the game out to explain to them their mistakes now they've got there.
Yeah.
They said, I had a guy here playing Monopoly with me earlier, please fuck off. Someone did try and sign up to this company. So in New York, a guy called Stanley Bresnov, who was the Commissioner of Social Services, he asked various shops to not stock the game, to remove it. He said it was defamatory and discriminatory. And so Hammerhead sued him for loss of earnings, and lost. Yay, there's a happy ending. They argued that the game was a spoof, and said they didn't mean, but really awkwardly for them, in various TV interviews, they said they actually believed a lot of the things that they said in the game. So, I mean, either of the games from Hammerhead Enterprises, I think I'm going to go with Capital Punishment, just because the sheer horror of the box alone qualifies it.
Because there is some... perhaps smaller arguments for the occasional sliver of capital punishment in extreme situations.
Whoa!
Hear me out. No, but they're examples of who they think is deserving of capital punishment. Then again, you're not going to put this kind of like paedophiles and Nazi war criminals on the front of a box, because that won't sell.
Unless you're selling Judenrouse.
Yeah.
Or Cards Against Humanity.
That's their marketing mistake.
The boxing of Cards Against Humanity.
That's the real evil of Monopoly, is it? Keeps coming out with a different skin. It's like, it doesn't matter what guise you put it under, it's not going to make it a good game. You've got Firefly Monopoly. There's Firefly the game. It already has its own board game, which even if it's bad, is better than that.
What I do want to see, though, is the Pyongyang version of Monopoly. Terrific. We will turn anything into a capitalist nightmare.
You just build statues of Kim Jong-un. Yeah. So, our three candidates for the world's worst board game are Ben suggesting the Ungame, Paul's perennial favourite of families, Monopoly, or my suggestion of Capital Punishment. I think there's so many offensive board games out there that capital punishment is just one example in a vast panoply of them. So I think...
It was turning my head.
Yeah.
Also, it does sound like it's got solid game mechanics, though.
I mean, I don't know how it plays.
If you could do the reverse to it, so that it highlights the dangers of...
Capital punishment.
So you're trying to get the criminals into the... But all of a sudden you go, oh, God, I've killed an innocent person.
That would be a lesson
and
then, there.
Yeah, and there's tons of bad consequences, you know.
Yeah.
That is a good point there. There don't appear to be enough liberal board games.
Yeah, funny that.
Says the person who suggested the Un game, the therapy in a box game.
Oh, shit, good point. Ignore that, strike it from the record.
So, the Un game, I don't know, I quite liked the... Because it comes from a place of good, it just is a bit saccharine.
Yeah, would you play it with your friends and family?
No, never a million years, but I would buy it and give it to someone.
What, instead of an intervention? you need to play this.
Yes, I can't channel my feelings verbally, I'm giving you this box.
It's all the parameters, isn't it? Because capital punishment is designed to be horrible and offensive. Whereas one was put out with under an air of going, hey, let's all, come on, let's talk about this. it came from a good place. It was just bad, badly mismanaged.
But I think I'm going to have to go with Monopoly. I think it has a lot to answer for. It's a poor excuse for a game that a lot of people get introduced to early and don't like. It causes arguments, it causes friction, and then it puts people off playing actual good board games.
Yeah, it's become a cancer as well. There's just the versions of it.
It's like Borg, isn't it? It just replicates and replicates.
What's popular now? Pokemon, we love that, Monopoly.
Yeah, like Lego, but not fun.
Yeah.
Lego do versions.
Yeah.
I have a bit of the worst news of the week, and the worst news of the week comes from Florida, the Florida Sun Post, in fact. Where 27-year-old Cliff Pryor, a man in Miami-Dade County, was charged with criminal mischief after he was caught spray-painting a shape resembling the male genitals on a pothole in Kendall Drive. He said he did it because he thought they'd be dealt with more promptly, which is great. And there is a guy in Manchester who he said he was inspired by, who the Telegraph did a piece on last year, who did the exact same thing. He goes around spray painting cocks on potholes because he thinks then the local council will deal with it much more quickly.
This is lovely news.
Great. Well, I think it's a good news. It's bad news for Cliff. Yeah, he's been arrested. Okay. But can either of you guess what this graffitiing English guy in Manchester who draws cocks on potholes might call himself?
Wanksy?
Yes! Oh, yes! Really good. Yes, he does.
Can I suggest, if you're going to graffiti a hole in the ground as genitalia, can I suggest perhaps women's genitalia would be more obvious?
Harder to draw. Hard to identify from a distance.
No one has ever seen one.
Yeah.
So, funnily enough, Cliff's story does have a happy ending for the pothole, or for a bad sad ending for the pothole, depending on the pothole wanted to be filled in, because it was fixed within 24 hours of the penis being drawn
there
on.
There you go.
But bad news.
That's a lovely sentence on its own. It was fixed within 24 hours of the penis being drawn on it.
Yeah.
Over to you, Paul, with the weather.
We have several penises coming in from the east.
I mean, that sounds like the sort of thing UKIP would say in a party political broadcast.
Oh, dear.
Well, before we wrap up, Paul, where can people find you online if they want to? Or are you doing anything in the next few months that they can come see? Obviously, you're still at the Crystal Maze.
Still at the Crystal Maze when this is broadcast. I remember recording this. Anyway, I'm doing... Nightmare Live is going to be rounding sort of various tours and various conventions and things this year. And my solo show, the MMORPG show, should be doing a regular night in London.
Excellent.
And be touring around Birmingham and a few other places as well. And if you like horror movies, my B-horror movie called Ghosts of Darkness will be out on DVD in March.
Excellent.
I know.
Oh, that's a lovely Easter present for people.
It's going to be
the Easter hit of the year
for the goriest of all religious festivals.
It's just too late for Oscar season.
I bought a copy for everyone.
That is it from Worst Foot Forward for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't buy Monopoly. Go and look at the top of Board Game Geek's rankings for better suggestions.
By Scythe.
By anything except for Monopoly.
Yeah, true.
Thank you very much for listening. We will chat to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mr. Monopoly and the tiny dog you rode in on.
Yeah.
Capitalist pig.
Go and do some tiny pointless ironing as well, you little mustachioed bourgeoisie industrialist monster.
It was really nice doing an episode where all three of us really knew quite a bit about what we were talking about, because all three of us are massive board game geeks. So if you want to find out more about Paul, obviously check out Nightmare Live. And Paul is brilliant, just generally. Follow him on Twitter, at Pipe Mustache. He's a lovely guy.
I'll say that. Thank you so much for listening. I get the feeling that some of you are recommending this to your pals, because we've been having a sneaky little look on the stats. There are people downloading them from cities where we don't know people.
Yeah, I don't have any friends in Kenya. this is weird.
Yeah. If you enjoyed this nonsense, please spread the news. Pop on iTunes, give us a rate, give us a subscribe, leave us a review. Preferably only positive, but we will accept constructive criticism.
If you have nothing nice to say, say nothing.
And if you want to follow us individually, you can do that too. I'm on Twitter at Ben Vanderveld.
I'm at Baz Magstay, and of course the podcast is the usual at Worstfoot, and on Facebook, and you can send us an email, worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. We love getting your emails.
I imagine if you listen to this bit, you're probably not a regular pod listener, because like me, you probably, on stuff I generally subscribe to, you've listened to the outro music and gone, right, done, I don't need to watch the credits. There probably isn't going to be a post pod scene where Samuel L. Jackson walks in as Nick Fury going, yeah, I've got a job for you.
Setting up the next podcast.
Yeah.
Hey, Vanderbilt, I've got a job for you now.
Oh, okay.
Next week I want you to have an Australian lady as a guest and get her to talk about the world's worst fairy tales.
Oh, I think I know just the girl.
Who is it?
It's Sarah Bonetto.
She sounds great.
Yeah, she is coming next week in HD. Bonetto.
I would subscribe to that.
I would also.
I would probably rate it 5 stars.
I would do that too.
I would probably stop listening at this point. I would think the host had become overindulgent.
I would agree with that as well.